The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hello, everyone. How's it going? Welcome back to another episode of Be Here for a While. I'm in a fantastic mood today because, well, what reason do I have not to be? Heck yes. I'm redoing my guest's intro because he has so many credits that I screwed it up the first time when he was here yesterday. So I'm going to redo it. And also, I can speak with major enthusiasm that he's probably one of my favorite guests. I had never met him before. My publicist set it up. We share the same publicist. And I was like, oh, yeah, he sounds like a cool dude. Sure, I'll have him on. He couldn't have been cooler and more interesting, and I'm really excited for you guys to hear this podcast. So this guy has been, he's had like over 200 roles. He's been a perennial favorite among industry execs and fans on both the small screen and big screen, best known for his current reoccurring roles on five popular shows, including Amazon's Bosch, HBO's hottest comedy series, Insecure, as well as appearing on the hit Showtime comedy series, Dice, and the new Duplass Brothers HBO series Room 104. He can't walk down the street without someone recognizing. In fact, Taylor Swift called him out at a party for his memorable appearance in the millennial favorite Law and Order. He's also appeared in movies with the likes of Alec Baldwin, Carl Reiner, Kevin Pollak, Taylor Schilling, Robert Duvall. It's crazy. He's been on House of Cards, Mad Men, Masters of Sex, Anatomy of Violence. He grew up in like a crazy entertainment industry household. His mom was a famous actress. His dad was a big time agent who used to represent like Marilyn Monroe and stuff. Anyways, cool dude. And so without further ado, we're going to get started with Spencer Garrett.
Hi, I'm 103 years old.
You've done a lot.
Yeah, I started out in 1942. I look pretty good, right?
Yes, very good. How old were you when you did start?
I started when I was my very first film credit was when I was 10. My mother was directing a movie. My mom is an actor.
Mm-hmm.
She was at the time she was president of the Screen Actors Guild. She was the first woman president of the Screen Actors Guild.
I read that you guys really have a lot of work ethic.
My grandparents. My grandparents raised my mother and my aunt on a showboat on the Mississippi River called the Goldenrod that was docked in St. Louis and would go up and down the river, and there was a theater on the boat, and people would come on the boat and they would do theater on the boat.
How cool.
So did they
own the boat, or they were just the talent on there?
They were the talent on the boat.
Uh-huh.
And they lived on the boat from time to time when they would go up and down the river. So that's kind of like,
So everyone
background.
In your
it's
family
like the
are
old
actors.
Expression, born in a trunk. I mean,
yeah.
I was literally like born in a trunk. But my mom was part of the inaugural class of the American Film Institute Women Directors Workshop, which has now been around for like 40 years. But the first class of it was like my mom and Maya Angelou, the poet, and Margot Kidder, and very, very prominent women in the film industry.
Mm-hmm.
And so she directed a movie with Diane Ladd and Martin Sheen, and the two little kids that she hired for free to act in her movie were me and Laura Dern.
Oh my God!
And I was 10, and she was 8,
cool
and that
stories.
Was my first. That was my first movie.
Are you still friends with Laura?
I still am. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. She actually she's on the board of governors of the Motion Picture Academy,
and
she was the one that called to tell me last month that I got into the Academy.
Really?
So, yeah.
Congratulations!
Pretty exciting. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Think you could hook me up with some party
some
tickets?
Screeners?
I got screeners.
Party tickets, screeners.
I'm more into the party tickets.
We're gonna have
I get
some
screeners.
Screener parties at my house
okay.
for sure in
All
a
right.
couple of months.
All right.
Yeah.
I've
been stealing my mom's screeners for the last 20 years, so now I'm finally getting my own in the mail.
Don't you get? You get screeners from SAG though.
You get screeners from SAG if you're there's sort of it's like a lottery system.
Oh. Is that why I didn't get them for a few years and then
possibly,
I got them last
yeah.
year? I thought I was in
or
trouble
if you don't
for some
pay your
reason.
Dues on time, they
I
don't
did,
send them
though.
To you. Yeah.
I thought it was because I never vote. I was like, am I getting punished for that?
I don't know. I don't know how it works, but now I'm going to get both. So
okay.
I'm going to have lots
Look
of screeners.
You.
And everybody that's listening is invited to come over to my house and
okay,
watch movies.
Maybe you don't want to do that.
Would you say you have a million downloads? Come on over.
Come on over, yeah.
Come on
Here's
over.
My address.
So that's my first, yeah, that was my first credit.
And so then did I you just movie. Steadily keep working as a kid?
I did like some after-school specials and commercials and things like that when mm-hmm. I was a little kid. My mom was in a movie called Limbo, which was the first movie about the Vietnam War, really, mm-hmm. that was released in 1973, and I was like 9 or 10 in that, and that's how I got my SAG card. I was Taft Hartley into the Union. It's a movie that nobody saw. It was my mom and Kate Jackson, and it was about the wives of POWs coming home from the Vietnam
War. Sounds interesting.
Really, it was actually a really interesting movie.
I love war movies.
But yeah, so I did like kid things. Mm-hmm. In commercials and things like that. But then I wanted to have a normal childhood.
So you went to school, normally played sports?
I went to school, normally played sports, went off to kind of a crunchy, artsy-fartsy high school in the woods in Maine.
Uh-huh. Was it like boarding school?
A boarding school, but it was very kind of performance art, mm-hmm. Not performance art, performance-oriented, called Hyde School. It was mm-hmm. in Bath, Maine, and I was there for like 3 years. And it was we had a show that we wrote and produced. All of the kids that we wrote and produced our own touring show called America's Spirit.
Wow, cool!
And we went up and down the East Coast. We performed, and that was the first time I performed on Broadway. We performed at Circle on the Square.
And your life is already so cool at like 16.
At 16.
Jeez.
At 16. But I mean, growing up with the son of a president of the union, I would come home from school and I would walk in the door of my house, and Jack Lemmon would be sitting there with Cesar Romero. You know.
Did you realize at the time, like, whoa, this is cool, or was it just looking back?
I think I was pretty aware. I mean, I got to meet Joan Crawford and Betty Davis, and you know, I was a film geek, like yeah. right out of the womb. I mean, I was.
So you knew right away you wanted to be in the entertainment.
Not
industry.
Really, not really. I mean, I wanted to have a normal life. I mean, mm-hmm. when I went off to college, I moved to D.C. I worked for National Public Radio, worked for NPR for 3 years. I worked on the Hill. I thought I was going to go into maybe politics or public policy, or you know, do something where I wore a suit and carried a briefcase and did something normal. And then on a dare, I auditioned for a play at the Arena Stage in Washington, D.C., and I got it, and I just was kind of off to the races from there. I kind of got the bug and, you know, got the Jones for it, and I just have kept going. And one of these days, I'm going to get out. But
I might be. Yeah. I think you're committed to it.
I might be committed to it. Just one more job. Just one last job, man, and then I'm out. That's
did
it.
Do you feel like you were naturally talented, or did that time that you were in school? But you booked like your first gig.
But my mom was in.
Oh, okay. No, I'm saying the one.
The after school special.
No, the one the play you just mentioned.
Which play?
The one in D.C.
Oh yeah, but I mean, I was carrying a spear. I mean, I wasn't playing Richard III. It was a tiny role.
Oh.
And I was playing tiny roles in little plays around D.C. And then I moved to New York and I studied for several years. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember auditioning for my first play in college, and I was pretty awful at it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I thought that I was going to be very good just by osmosis.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'm the son of an actor,
yeah.
and you know, and the grandson of actors, so naturally I'm going to be good. And then my very first audition, I tanked it. I mean, it was not very good. So,
yeah. No one's first audition is ever good.
No, probably not. You know, and I still
like no one's first stand-up experience is ever good. But it's good at the
time. I don't know how stand-up comics do it. It's absolutely,
it's kind of an addiction after a while.
I'm sure it's an addiction, but to me it's absolutely terrifying what stand-up comics do.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know Leslie Wolf?
Mm-hmm.
So Leslie Wolf, friend of ours, you know, she teaches this thing at the Improv where she teaches normal everyday people, accountants and dentists, to do stand-up comedy in front of an audience. And she's always been trying to get me to do it, and I just will absolutely not.
I think you should try it.
It scares the shit out of
maybe
me.
That's and I do, maybe and that's I know, the and next I do, phase I
know
of your career.
You're supposed to do what scares you. I know that. But I just, for some reason, I just, the idea of bombing in front of an audience or telling a joke and just you're hearing tumbleweeds.
But then it just makes you want to get up on stage again.
Really?
And win, yeah.
Yeah, it's not like golf. Like, you hit a bad shot, and then you want to just, like, get better. I think with stand-up, it's...
I think so. It's like, I mean, it's painful when that happens, but then you just want to get on stage again to like prove that, no, I'll make someone laugh.
I can't remember jokes. That's my problem. I know three. I know three jokes that I have in my repertoire
in my
head.
Do you want to tell them to me?
Two peanuts were walking down a dark alley. One was assaulted. Thank you. I made you laugh. See, maybe I've got the gift.
Maybe you do.
Maybe I got the
gift.
Did
you write that one?
Want to hear another
one?
I did not write it. Okay. I don't know who wrote it. I used to... My father was an encyclopedia of jokes.
Really?
I was bartending in Washington, D.C. for 3 years when I was working at NPR, and I would be behind the bar, and this was pre-internet, pre-cell phones. Mm-hmm. I would use the house phone behind the bar the bar was called the Child Herald in Washington, D.C., and I would get on the phone. I would call my dad in L.A. It would be 3 hours earlier, and I'd call him. He'd be at work, and I'd say, Dad, I need some jokes right now. And he would tell me 6 or 7 jokes. I'd write them down on a bar napkin, and then I would have a little repertoire behind bar, so I could, you know,
so you could hit on the ladies.
So I could hit on the ladies.
That's probably what it was. Let's be honest.
You want to hear a joke? You want to hear another one?
Yes.
Guy walks into bar. Bar's completely empty. Guy sits down, orders a drink. Bartender puts down the scotch and soda. The guy hears, "Hey, nice hat." He looks around. He's like, "Who the fuck said that?" Then he hears, "Nice shoes." Looks around. He's like, this place is totally empty. Am I hearing things? Am I seeing ghosts? What's going on? Then he hears, nice tie. Bartender comes back. Guy says, hey, bartender, what's going on with this bar? It's totally empty, but I'm hearing things. I'm hearing nice shoes, nice hat, nice tie. What's going on? Bartender says, oh, it's the peanuts. They're complimentary. Thank you.
Oh, my God.
Come on.
You have a lot of nut jokes.
All nut jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You really like the peanut jokes.
Wait a minute, I got one more peanut joke. No, that's it. I think that's it. I think those are the two jokes that I know.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, no. A skeleton walks into a bar.
Uh-huh.
He says, I'll have a beer and a mop.
Beer and a mop.
Skeleton.
Hold on. I don't know if
beer. Skeleton orders a beer.
Oh, and a mop.
And a mop. Okay. Scratch that one off my list.
Well, I was kind of just fixated on the peanut ones. You know, maybe that's my genre.
You can use those.
Oh, I might.
It's good material.
But I'm going to find out probably that someone else wrote that and, you know.
I heard Christopher Walken tell that joke in some interview. And it sounded a lot better when Christopher Walken said it. Because he's like, a guy walks into a bar, a skeleton walks into a bar and he says, give me a beer and a mop.
That is one of the best Christopher Walken impressions I've ever heard.
Thanks.
So maybe.
Appreciate it.
Maybe you're an improv actor.
You're too kind.
Maybe
you're very nice.
Maybe you should be on SNL.
That's terrifying. Jay Moore. Jay Moore told me that. Jay Moore told me the Christopher Walken version of it. I worked on a show with Jay, and we were doing, I was like, Jay, how are you? And he's like, Spencer, nice to see you. And we were like talking back and forth like this. It was crazy.
Jay does a lot of impressions.
Yes, he does. He's
what show
funny.
Were you, did you work with him on?
It was Gary Unmarried.
Mm-hmm.
It was his sitcom that he did for a couple of years. Yeah.
I don't know that I watched it, but I know of it. That's cool.
I think it was the last sitcom I was ever hired to do.
Really?
Yes, about 10 years ago. Every once in a while. Somebody,
you mean sitcom. Okay.
A sitcom. Like a four camera.
Yeah.
I don't get hired to do a lot of funny stuff.
Well, you didn't lead with the peanut joke in the audition.
I should have led with the
peanut joke.
You know
what I mean? That's your first mistake.
If I had led with the peanut joke with Jimmy Burrows, I might have, I might be
Your
on,
career
I might
could
be on
a different
Will and Grace.
Path. Yeah.
Yeah. I might be sitting here instead of, I usually get shot or, killed.
Which is weird because you don't have that serious of a look.
I'm a very sweet, sweet face.
A very sweet face. You look like a little boy.
Thank you.
I don't know. You also remind me of this actor that looks just, you guys look like, whatever. Anyways, so I was going to ask
Wait,
you.
Wait, who do I look like?
I was in a class
is
with him.
Is he devastatingly handsome and funny?
Yes, he's
and
very cute.
Does he know peanut jokes like I do?
See, not many people do it. I'm just going to say, I'll show you him afterwards. I just got back from Mexico and it was the greatest time. I was with my friend Stassi. We get laid in the sun. I got a lot of sun. But unfortunately, summer doesn't last forever. But you can stretch that feeling of sun and fun just a bit longer with Kopari Beauty's line of products made from 100% organic coconut oil. And let me tell you, we use them on the entire trip. Kopari makes multitasking skincare and body care products that are free from sulfates, silicones, GMOs, or parabens. Their lightweight sheer oil works great as a face moisturizer and a makeup primer. I use it every day. Their coconut balm with aloe is intensely soothing, perfect for skin that maybe got a little too much sun this summer, which is exactly what happened to me in Mexico. And so I've also been using that. For head-to-toe hydration with a beach smell that won't quit, nothing beats Kopari's organic coconut melt. It's the ultimate multitasker. And their coconut body glow lets you keep that summer shimmer going well into the fall. Seriously. With Kopari, you'll get vacation flashbacks for the rest of the year. I am so excited that I have an offer for you guys. Say aloha to your best skin and hair of your life with Kopari. Go to KopariBeauty.com/be here to get 20% off your order. That's KopariBeauty.com/be here. KopariBeauty.com/be here for 20% off. So you were saying you wanted to have a normal childhood. Yeah. Do you feel like your parents being in the entertainment industry, like they didn't have like a normal... No, you thought, okay, sorry. You want to have a normal life, I meant to say. Do you feel like, did you watch your parents and think like, nah, I'd like to be more normal than that?
Or? Yes. My father was a talent agent.
Uh-huh.
And my mom has been acting since she was like two.
Uh-huh.
She has a birthday. She would be happy if I said how old she was going to be, but she's got a birthday in a couple weeks, and uh-huh. she's up there.
Is she still working?
She's still working. She just did a movie last year with Burt Reynolds.
That's so cool.
Called Dog Years, that's coming out in November. So she's still doing it. So yeah, when I was a kid, I saw, we had money one day, then the next day we didn't have money, then the mm-hmm. next day we had money. It was like up and down and up and down, and I thought, this is a roller coaster that I don't want to be on, you know. So.
But your dad had that's a business job still, if he's an agent.
Yeah, but he was an agent for 50 years. He was an agent who didn't like actors.
Okay.
He didn't really like actors.
Who did he represent?
He had everybody from like Vanessa Redgrave to uh-huh. Timothy Dalton, Oliver Reed. He had a lot of British clients, a lot of character people. I mean, mm-hmm. he started out as an agent. And at one point, he represented Marilyn Monroe and Marlene
really?
Dietrich.
Oh my
50s.
God, your life is so cool. I mean, it's just like, that's pretty crazy.
I mean, he was old Hollywood in the 1950s at Universal. He was an agent.
People used to still smoke in the offices and stuff.
Smoking in the offices. No, he was truly like from the Mad Men era. Like, passed
away. This is why I'm glad I didn't really look you up that much, because I get to find out all this stuff from you.
My father, who left us, he went to the great talent agency in the sky about 2 years ago.
Oh.
But on his last day on earth, if you looked in his closet, he still had the same pair of black Florsheim wingtip shoes.
Really?
That he got, you know.
Was he saving them, or did he still wear those?
No, his great piece of parenting advice to me was tree your shoes. Put shoe trees in your shoes and they'll last forever. And he had the same like Brooks Brothers three-piece suits. Mm-hmm. He kept his wardrobe was exactly the same. If you saw the clothes that he wore in pictures in 1967, you'd go, that's Don Draper. My father was Don Draper. Actually, my father was...
Googleable?
Is my father Googleable?
Yeah, meaning would I find a photo of him?
Probably, yeah, somewhere in there. I mean, his name was Dick, back when you could be called Dick without
irony. And what was
irony.
Your original last name?
Huh?
What was your original last name?
Heckenkamp.
Heckenkamp?
Yes. Yep, okay. Heckenkamp. Yep. My father was sort of a combination of Don Draper and Roger Sterling.
Okay.
The John Slattery character from Mad Men.
Okay.
You know, he was a bon vivant. He was a smoker and a drinker and a party guy.
Well, it seems like he lived to be pretty old.
He lived for a guy that smoked four packs of cigarettes up until he was like 65, starting at 11. He had a pretty long life.
See, this happens a lot where people see.
I know.
This
it's
is
amazing.
Why I'm like, you know what? I like to drink and I think that
Japan,
I'm going to be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I want to be that old. I don't want to be like...
How old was he when he...
Well, I just heard the other day about somebody that lived to be 150 years old. Some guy in Siberia.
That's too old.
I don't want to be 150.
Wait, so...
150.
Wow.
That's bananas. It's crazy. Rachel, it's crazy. I tell you.
So you saw... Okay, so you saw like you didn't want that life, but you inevitably gravitated towards it.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I didn't want the crazy up and downness mm-hmm. of it, but
were you an only child?
I'm an only child.
Mm-hmm.
But I grew up being taken to the theater.
Yeah.
My mom would go and do a play in New York for a couple of years, and then come back to L.A.
And you guys would always go with her. You were bicoastal.
Bicoastal, back and forth.
Or do you have a place in both?
Had a place in both. Had mm-hmm. a place in New York and a place in L.A. Grew up literally back and forth and back and forth between L.A. and New York for 25 years. And then in between there, high school in Maine, college in North Carolina. So I got around. I was around mm-hmm. a lot. You know, I mean, I moved around a lot. But
probably have a lot of interesting friends from just being able to like have people different places and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But some of my earliest and best memories were going to see shows on Broadway mm-hmm. when I was a teenager, you know, when I was a kid. And then when I saw probably in 1982, 1983, when the Steppenwolf Theater Company from Chicago came to New York, and they mm-hmm. brought Sam Shepard's plays. They brought True West, and they brought Lanford Wilson's Bomb and Gilead with John Malkovich and Gary Sinise and Laurie Metcalf and all of these actors that nobody had ever seen before in this kind of theater that nobody had ever seen before. It was like exciting and visceral and rock and rolly and fucked up and dirty and crazy.
That's
and
cool.
And it was amazing to watch. And mm-hmm. so there was a period of time in the early 80s where the theater scene was just so crackling and alive. And
that's when comedy was booming, too. I think it was just people were going out to see live shows. We're dying up here?
Yeah.
No, I need to see. I read the book. The book's incredible.
Talk about dark.
Yeah.
It's dark.
My God. If
that's
it's,
maybe that's why I said that. Because I've been watching it. And
I heard it's not exactly like the book, but if it's anything even similar, it is the darkest book I've ever read.
It's. I mean, but the people in it, the characters in it are dark. Melissa mm-hmm. Leo is playing sort of a version of Mitzi Shore, mm-hmm. I guess. And I know Jim. I worked with Jim on Yes Man, mm-hmm. Who's one of the most lighthearted and funny and amazing people I've ever gotten to work with. I mean, I did Yes Man. I was on it for like 10 days, uh-huh. and I laughed my ass off every day for
really?
14 hours a day.
See, comics are fun to hang out with.
Comics are fun. Yeah, I'm sure
Minus the darkness.
Minus the darkness. Yeah. I mean, Dice is somebody who I did a series with Dice.
What's it? You did his series, right?
I did Hits. I did a series with Andrew called Hits, H-I-T-Z.
Oh, okay.
You don't remember it? It was a classic on UPN.
No, I don't.
23 episodes. How could you miss it?
I missed it. Yeah,
you must have been doing something really
important. I'm kicking myself, yeah.
It was called Hits. Mm-hmm. And he played sort of a Tommy Mottola music industry mm-hmm. mogul guy. And I was his kind of sycophantic toady in the record business that I worked with. And he and I like became the most unlikely friends.
I mean, he's with Jonas, isn't he? Still, or used to be?
He works with Laurie from time to time, yeah. And Dice and I hit it off right off the bat. I found myself all of a sudden, I'm smoking, you know, Marlboro Lights 100s with him. And you know,
you're wearing leather all of a sudden.
Going to CD Comedy Club.
You have an
didn't
earring.
Do the leather, but I'd go to Vegas and see him play and, mm-hmm. you know, and hang out. And he loved to gamble. And so I got to see a whole other side of that comedy world.
Yeah.
And the mania around him. I mean, by the time we had done Hits in 96, the Dice mania had sort of died down a little mm-hmm. bit, and he was kind of on a downswing. But it's fascinating, you know, I mean, having been in this business as long as I have, and to see somebody like him who was, you know, having a good life and a good career, all of a sudden he gets into a Woody Allen movie mm-hmm. 4 years ago with Cate Blanchett, and he has this enormous career comeback. And he's
so
got his
cool.
own show now, and which I just got to do. I got to work with him, and he's exactly the same.
Really?
Had an absolute blast with him. So I
that's
mean,
really
we've
cool.
been we've been friends for you know for 20 years, and so I play the head of a network. He wants to host the Oscars, and uh-huh. I play the head of whatever the fictitious network is that's airing the Oscars, and I say, under no circumstances will we ever let you host the Academy Awards. Harambe the Gorilla will host the Academy Awards before you do, Dice.
See? You are doing comedy stuff.
See? There you go.
Yeah, you're that's selling it. Yourself
well, no, but that short. That was a, I think it went from Jay Moore show, and then I got to do the Dice thing. So there
okay.
was a lot
so
of,
you're
you
still
know,
doing it.
A lot of getting shot in the head in between, but, you know.
Did you ever have like a career that you wanted to emulate? Like someone that you looked up to where you're like, that's the kind of career I want.
God, I love, there's so many actors that I love. I mean, I love Christian Bale.
Mm-hmm.
He's such a shapeshifter and such an interesting actor. I kind of fascinated by everything he does.
Mm-hmm.
Got to work with him on Public Enemies, several years ago and got to pick his brain a little bit. I love his career. I love the choices that he makes. I love people that make really bold, interesting choices.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Johnny Depp is somebody that I admired, you know, as complicated as he is and as fraught with controversy as his life and career have been.
Yeah.
He's a fascinating actor. I mean, he makes really interesting choices. So I don't know that I would enjoy that level of crazy celebrity that he has. I mean, when we did Public Enemies, we would rap. Sometimes we were shooting in Wisconsin in the mm-hmm. freezing cold, and we would wrap at 2-3 in the morning, and we would walk outside. We'd come outside the set, and thousands of people would be lined up behind a barricade
Jeez.
Just to watch him walk by.
People don't realize that, like you know, like actors are obviously crazy, but like that level of fandom and celebrity makes people go crazy. I can't imagine just like you can't be normal.
No,
you can't live a normal life at
all.
You can't.
You can't. You really can't. I mean, we were shooting in Appleton, Wisconsin, which is this tiny little town. It's actually its claim to fame is where Harry Houdini is from, Appleton, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. It's like a block long, and we were in this little hotel, and it was a lot of guys in the movie, and we want to hang out and go out and, you know, and check out the town. And he could never come out. He could never come out and play with us because people got wind that he was.
It's like they're caged animals. It's sad.
A little bit, but yeah. But he's a brilliant actor. But I mean, Alec Baldwin is somebody that I've admired.
Yeah, I love his career.
I love his career. I love that he went from this gorgeous leading man mm-hmm. to, you know, he's aged into something else mm-hmm. physically, and his physicality suits the style of acting that he does now.
Totally.
He can kind of do effortlessly from comedy to drama.
Mm-hmm.
I find him very funny. I love his politics.
I think he's really funny, yeah.
Yeah, he's really funny. Philip Seymour Hoffman, who we lost a couple years ago.
Great.
I mean, he was to me. He was my generation. I mean, I'm a few years older than he would have been, but he was to me. He was our Brando.
Mm-hmm.
He was just an extraordinary talent.
Yeah,
you know, and very true to his roots in the theater. Loved doing theater.
Mm-hmm.
Loved directing plays, being in plays. He had a wonderful theater company called The Labyrinth mm-hmm. in New York. And somebody that I really admired, and I got to know a little bit, and never got to work with him. But if he was doing a play in New York, I made sure that I was there to see it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he did Death of a Salesman and Long Day's Journey Into Night. He and John C. Reilly, they did True West. Speaking of Sam Shepard, who we just lost, they switched roles mm-hmm. every other night. They would
oh, really?
Take over. So
that's
two character plays. So
yeah.
It was Austin and Lee, and one was sort of the nerdy writerly brother, and the other one was sort of this kind of seedy career criminal. And one night John Reilly would play it, and one night Phil would play it, and mm-hmm. they would switch off. And I got to see it, and I saw it several times because it was so brilliant to watch them. And so, you know, I love actors.
Yeah.
I love actors. I love watching good work.
Yeah.
And I love, you know, I love seeing what makes good actors do good work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always trying to learn from them. You know?
Have you ever thought about if you didn't get into acting, because you got into it so young, what else, what would you have done?
I don't know. I when I was a little kid, I wanted to be a cartoonist.
Uh-huh.
And not
a lot of money in that.
Huh? Not a lot of money in it.
Yeah.
I know. Unless you're... Charles like Schultz,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. There's only a few
peanuts.
Yeah.
There's probably a couple comics. You know, yeah. Gary Trudeau probably has done very well with Doonesbury. But yeah, I was kind of fascinated by like cartooning and, mm-hmm. and illustration, and I painted when I was little. I still paint now. But I thought if I didn't go into it, if I didn't stay with acting, I would go into academia
mm-hmm.
somehow. I would
be a teacher.
I would teach in. In the college world.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever taught any acting classes?
I have, yeah. I still do. I teach
teach
a master class here in town.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, once a month I teach like a 4-hour class.
Where at?
The Ruskin School, which is... John Ruskin was Sanford Meisner's assistant for many years mm-hmm. in New York. And so he has a class. And in fact, Matthew Perry teaches out there, Rob mm-hmm. Morrow, Richard Schiff, Dylan McDermott, some terrific actors that are also kind of Meisner students.
Yeah.
They teach this master class. And so I get a chance to go and watch these young actors, you know, put up scene work, and, you know, I work with them, and I love it. I get a kick out of it.
I bet that's cool.
Yeah, it's great. It's great fun.
I bet that's really cool.
Yeah.
Do you have kids?
I don't.
Okay, if you did have kids, would you want them to be in the entertainment industry?
I'd want them to be... It's such a different business now mm-hmm. than it was when I started out. But there's also, it seems like there's just crazy more opportunities now.
There isn't,
right?
It's
there's so much television.
Yeah, like people, you know, unless you get in really young, the like agencies and all that, they're not really willing to develop people
yeah.
anymore unless yeah. you're super young. So that's kind of like, that's different. You sort of have to make your own way. But on the other side of it, there are so many opportunities to make your own way with like YouTube and Vine and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But then again, those people don't really translate. Like, A lot of times they'll try to like hire a YouTuber, you know, for an acting role because they're like, well, they have a big following, so maybe that. But it never really works because they have no training.
Yeah, they have no training, and that drives me bananas.
It drives me bananas too.
And also seeing, like a lot of the major agencies now have like social media divisions
mm-hmm.
where they actively look for new talent on YouTube. And,
yeah.
And I mean, I know that's how Justin Bieber was discovered, and a couple of people. I think yeah. Rachel Bloom came out of there, and you know, and there've been a couple of podcasts that have been very successful that are now being turned into series. So yeah. I mean, there's a lot of talented people out there.
Yeah.
You know?
But there's what people I take just issue with influencers. Like because she's actually very funny. One of my friends is she has an Instagram account called Girl with No Job, and it's really funny. And
I know her a
really?
Lot of her.
Yeah. It's really funny. She has a lot of, you know.
No, I'm just saying, I know a lot of.
Oh, girls with no jobs.
Girls with no jobs.
Yeah, they're in LA, and usually they're sponsored by someone.
Yeah, yes.
If you know what I mean?
Yes. Wink, wink.
But she makes like these funny memes, but a lot of times she just pulls memes from, you know, other people's accounts. But like, she has a booming career just from that. Like, and I'm sure she's represented at a big agency just
so
from.
So she kind of has a job. She has no job.
Yeah,
she actually has
but
a job.
It's a huge thing. Like, that's a whole other way to make it, which is crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
See, you come back to walking.
I want to get a walking accent.
You're almost there.
Crazy.
It's crazy. Come on, Rachel.
Oh my God. I spent a year and a half at Second City doing like the full improv track. Didn't develop one impression.
Really? Here in LA?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just finished it. I'm like, I don't know what I did the whole time. Like, I didn't develop any impressions at all.
What did you do?
I don't know.
Did you learn anything?
It's hard to do that when you're a stand-up first.
Yeah.
Because improv is so much different than stand-up.
Yeah.
And sketch or whatever. Because stand-up's a medium of like telling jokes and kind of being cool.
Yeah.
You're not really wacky very often on stage.
Yeah.
And so the whole time I'm in a scene with people like being wacky, I'm like always just thinking like this would be a really great time for a joke. I'm like, but that would stop the scene. That's not what you're supposed to do. So it was really hard for me to like...
You're not really wacky as a stand-up?
No.
Unless you are... unless you're like a Chris D'Elia. Speaking
he's
of Chris D'Elia.
He's kind of wacky, but
he has
very,
a really like rubbery physical.
Yes, but he's
like
very sarcastic and he tells jokes.
Yeah.
Improv is, you know, just feeding off of the other person and just like making scenes and stuff. Chris would have a hard time with it too, because he would be thinking probably like, you can think of a really funny joke in the moment, but it sort of stops the scene for the other people.
Yes, that's
you know?
True. That's true.
So it was... Yeah, it's harder. I think it's better to do it the other way around.
Like, I've never taken an improv class. I've always been curious about it.
I don't know.
I've always wanted to do like a Groundlings or a Second City.
You should do it just to see if you like it. I'd be curious to,
I think I would like it.
And see if you like it.
I know that I would like that. I don't know if I'd like stand-up, but I know that I would like that.
I think you'd prefer to go to Second City over Groundlings. Groundlings is more like they have these stupid games and rules and dumb stuff that they have to do.
Yeah.
Second City is more like for actors.
One of the most brilliant improvisers I've ever seen, and we actually were roommates for quite a while, is, do you know who David Pasquese is?
Mm-mm.
Dave is an actor out of Chicago, and he has a two-man improv troupe, I guess you'd call it. It's a two-man improv show called TJ and Dave.
Mm-hmm.
They recently split up after a long time, but they had their own theater together in D.C., and it's two guys who walk out on stage onto a bare stage with a chair or whatever in front of an audience, and they walk out with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave will say, "Hey, that's a nice tie you're wearing." And then all of a sudden, like 25 minutes later, they will have created this entire world. They will have created this entire story from beginning to end. It's extraordinary
to
watch.
Really cool.
Anybody that's listening, go on YouTube and watch TJ and Dave if you want to see two masters at work.
I actually may have seen it now. I think I just didn't know the names.
And Dave was in town a couple weeks ago, and he and Joel Murray, who's one of the youngest of Bill Murray's brothers, a wonderful actor in his own right, and he and Joel did the two-man thing together. And I was just entranced. I was fascinated
It's impressive when people
really
can do that. It really is.
It really is.
It really is. Do you find it hard to date in the entertainment industry?
Yeah.
Were you married before?
No, I've never been married.
You've never been
married. Never been married. I came close.
You're like an eternal bachelor?
No, I just...
You have a girlfriend now, right?
I can't. I came close.
Yeah.
It's a dodge your bullet story.
Mm-hmm.
It
was a good idea not to get married to this person?
Not a good idea not to get married to someone who's leading a double life. And
like
flying to Paris on the weekend with somebody else. Yeah.
Was she an actress or was she a
sponsored
girl?
She was an actress
girl?
With a big, giant, steaming neon capital A, and who was having a hard time getting ahead in the business.
Mm-hmm.
So
wait, what do you mean by like an A?
Like an actress with a capital A.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, or if you want to get into, you know, Nathaniel Hawthorne, like Scarlet Letter.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were saying.
Okay. No, she was just, you know, you say she's an actress with a capital A. Yeah. She was a very, very ambitious person, and basically decided to take a shortcut and got involved with a very successful movie producer who basically said, why don't you come with me to parties and premieres and events and things and be my arm candy.
And she didn't tell you that's what she was doing?
No.
You just had to find out through other
people? I found out about 3 months before I was about to put a ring on her hand.
Oh, that has got to scar you. So that's probably why you didn't get married after that.
Yeah, so I was kind of gun shy. It kind of beat me up for a little while after that because I just randomly ran into somebody. This is not to get into, you know, psychoanalysis, but I ran into somebody in town. I had the ring in my pocket. I was walking around with a ring in my pocket.
Oh,
and this
my
is
God,
probably
how's
this
that?
Is probably
how many years ago?
This story is probably relevant. This is in 2000. Uh-huh. It's probably relevant to people that are listening that are, you know, living in Los Angeles and dating.
100%. Well, and I think it's relevant for anyone though. But
if you're dating somebody that's I didn't really have any awareness of how truly desperately she wanted to
make it
get ahead. So I'm walking around with the ring in my pocket.
Girls can almost be worse than guys in that way.
Oh my God! I literally bumped into somebody in a diner, started talking to them, and she said, "Oh, you're an actor, right?" And I said, "Yeah." And I said, "You look familiar." She said, "Yeah." What are you doing? What are you working on? She said, "Oh, I just did this. I just did this movie in Mexico with blah blah blah. I won't say her name." And I said, that's my girlfriend. You worked with my girlfriend. She said, oh, that's your girlfriend. She said, that's interesting. So how long have you been together? And I said, we've been together for about 9 months. And she sort of, her jaw dropped on the floor and she picked it back up. And that's what she started to tell me. She said, well, I hate to tell you this, but like,
whoa.
I was with your girlfriend in London last week with her boyfriend, who was this producer.
I wonder why she felt the need to like tell you and not cover for her if she was friends with her.
She was trying to, I think she was trying to save me from
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so, but that story is probably...
That's crazy, because you just ran into, you don't even know
just,
that person.
I mean, it was like one of the...
The truth always comes out.
Huh?
The truth always comes out,
but it was one of those things. I'm not like a big believer in fate and the stars and all of that. But
I am in that case. That was.
But in that case,
you
like
run into anyone.
Somebody brought me to that diner on that particular day in that moment, and I was meant to meet that person. Because if I hadn't found out on that day, I would have found out, you know, 6 months later when we were married or something.
And that would have been way worse.
It would have sucked.
Yeah.
Yeah. So but that story that happened to me, the whole point is I'm saying. It's probably happens.
I'm sure it happens all the time.
A thousand times a day in this town.
All the time.
I just happened to have gotten out of it. Well, it happened to have happened to me, and I survived it.
Yeah.
Let's say, you know, but I'm kind of embarrassed by it. You know, after
why would
a while,
you be embarrassed?
I was embarrassed that I fell for it. I was embarrassed that
I get that.
I fell for because. This person was so good at this double
so scary.
This double life.
What would she say when she was going out of the country?
She'd say, "I'm going to visit a friend of mine back in Oklahoma who's dying of cancer." Or I'm going.
This is before social media, probably. She's posting that she's in. Get away with a lot.
It was like the internet was just around, but it wasn't like, you know, but there was no Google and Facebook and all of that. So she'd say, "Oh yeah, I'm going to go see some family in Oklahoma, or I'm going to Phoenix to shoot a Bud Light commercial." Oh great, have a great time.
But what would happen if you couldn't get a hold of her? Especially if you would call the international number?
Actually in Phoenix shooting a Bud Light commercial. She'd be lying on a beach in Maui somewhere, or at some hotel in Europe, and she would be calling me from payphones in Europe, or she'd say, "I'm going to shoot a commercial in Chicago." So she'd be calling me from South America, and I'd say, "How's Chicago?" So you say, oh, you know, it's windy. You know, it's like,
oh my God. So,
and I was just, you know, I was a stupid kid in love. And yeah. I just thought, okay, oh, well, come home soon. And she'd come home and bring me presents, and everything was hunky dory. And
I was. You're like this imported French chocolate. That's oh, yeah, they have
exactly.
that. They have that in Chicago.
That's exactly what happened. I mean, she'd come home with, you know, major goodies, and you know, she'd also have like gorgeous couture gowns, and you know, a new diamond bracelet on, and like, where did you get that? Oh, I got it at the flea market. You know. And I was so stupid and naive, and I fell for it.
It's not stupid.
Like such a schmuck.
I think that everyone's fallen for something like that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
everyone has.
I survived it. I hope you did too.
Yeah. You have a lovely girlfriend now, though. That's another link that Lori sent me.
She's a reporter.
Yeah, I know exactly
CNN,
who she is.
And she lives in D.C. And it's this kind of back and forth. Transcontinental, bicoastal mm-hmm. thing.
It's probably good though. Like you're dating someone that understands like TV and the entertainment industry, but isn't an actress.
Yes, she's not an actress, and she's been in the political world mm-hmm. or the world of political journalism for 25 years, and I'm an absolute political junkie. So
yeah.
And having lived in D.C., I love going back there, and I love being part of that world, and it's always, I'm always meeting like fascinating people whenever I go back there.
Yeah.
So, but being a political junkie, and I mean, I just got cast in, Jason Reitman's new movie who mm-hmm. Thank you for smoking. Mm-hmm. I did as a movie, that he directed several years ago. And,
he's into the comedy scene. He did a documentary on the roast battle, I think.
Jason Reitman did?
Uh-huh.
Did he really?
Uh-huh. He doesn't do comedy, but.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm playing Bob Woodward. I'm playing the you know, iconic journalist Bob mm-hmm. Woodward. So I have an opportunity to meet him next week. So I'm going back to Washington, and I'm going to have a chance to sit down and have a lunch with him and find out what it was like in 1988 working on the Gary Hart campaign.
So cool.
You know, so things like that, I mean, are pretty neat.
Yeah,
so,
that's really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
What's your favorite role that you've had so far?
I had one scene in a movie with Catherine Keener called Lovely and Amazing,
mm-hmm.
Directed by Nicole Holofcener, who directs Catherine in all of her movies. Catherine, she uses Catherine in all of her films. Nicole's a wonderful director, and she asked me to do this one scene where I played sort of a swishy West Hollywood shopkeeper.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really how it was described. There was nothing really more to it than that on the page. And so I was running lines with Catherine before we went in, and I was just going to play it just kind of effeminate and sort of flighty and weird. I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do with it. And then at the last minute, I decided to make him German. And so he started talking like this, and I started talking to Catherine, and I said, what are you doing in my store? And she was selling wrapping paper that she had made, homemade wrapping paper, and it had little brown dots on it. And I said, it looks like a little turd. You know,
I'm very impressed with your accent.
Thank
and
you
your
so much. And so I sort of created this character named Willie, and I got to play. And I was on screen for like a minute with her, and I just had a wonderful time. And so that's like my favorite thing that I've ever done.
That's awesome.
It's my favorite role, and I'd love to have a whole show where I just talk like this with you.
Why don't you write it,
Rachel? How are you today?
That's awesome.
Yes, it looks like a little turd.
It's so funny.
I just like saying turd.
Turd.
Yes.
Did you ever have a role that you passed up and then someone else took it and you regret it?
Not yet. I'm sure that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Not yet. I haven't passed up on too much. I mm-hmm. love to work too much.
Yeah.
So I don't, unless there's like two or three things that happen at the same time
mm-hmm.
and they can't work out the schedule, I'll try to do them all if I can,
yeah.
if they can fit it in, you know. So I haven't been lucky enough to be able to turn anything down.
I think you just have like a really major work ethic. Sure.
I have a pretty good work ethic.
Do you ever get time off?
Yeah. I had actually 3 months off for the first time in like 7 years.
My gosh.
When I finished Insecure, second season of Insecure, mm-hmm. and I was in my car, and I left my trailer, and I was in my car, and I was driving home, and I went, oh, fuck. fuck, I don't have another job to go to now. And it was the first time. I mean, listen, that's champagne problems.
I'm sure you weren't panicking. You've been working for years.
No. I mean, I wasn't panicking, but I was kind of like, oh. But listen, when you're an actor, you think, I'm never going to work again.
Yeah.
Never going to work again. That's it. I finished that job, and I was kind of like, I went into like a little funk for a couple of days, and mm-hmm. I thought, oh, man. And then I had a couple of auditions that I didn't get,
mm-hmm.
and I thought, oh, shit, I've forgotten how to act, and I don't know how, I'm never going to work again. So it's just that actor's thing.
Yeah,
that's
true.
On that. You know, we're always, there's that little bit of insecurity where you mm-hmm. think you never know where that next gig is coming
so
from.
True.
So I was spoiled after having had 7 years of pretty consistent, mm-hmm. you know, I was recurring on like 5-6 different things at the same time, going from Vancouver to Atlanta to Toronto to Thailand, you know, really crazy, fun, busy, doing really neat things.
Do you like the travel part?
I love it. I love it. I went to... I got cast in a movie, a big action movie, big silly action movie with Pierce Brosnan and Owen Wilson mm-hmm. called No Escape. And
I haven't seen that, but it sounds funny.
It's No Escape. Mm-hmm. He couldn't escape from the horrific cultural revolution that was going on in this Asian town. Owen Wilson moves to this city in Asia with his family, Lake Bell, the great mm-hmm. Lake Bell, and his kids. And the day they get there, there's like a coup that mm-hmm. happens, and he couldn't escape, and hence the title. It's actually a pretty good movie. And but I played his boss, who is trying to convince him what a great job it would be. And it was a scene that took place in a restaurant in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of shooting at stateside, they flew me to Bangkok mm-hmm. for the day. So I flew from here to actually Chiang Mai, Thailand, which is like north of Bangkok. So they flew me to Thailand for the day to do this one scene with Owen Wilson that took place in a restaurant mm-hmm. in Dallas.
That's so cool.
So we shot it, and then it was exhausting.
Is he a good dude?
Great dude.
Yeah.
Great dude. Really, really interesting.
He's
interesting
so funny.
Guy. Yeah, he's so very funny. You know, I heard some radio. Some ad the other day, and some guy was like talking like him. He was like trying to sound like Owen Wilson.
Really?
And the guy was like a car dealership. He's like, yeah, you really need to come down here and buy these Nissans, man.
You know? I think Barry Katz kind of sounds like him and sort of like looks like an older version
of
him.
He does. Yeah. He does. Yeah.
It weirds me out.
No, I had a good time with him. I had a good time with him. And then the year before that, I got to go to Kuala Lumpur,
mm-hmm.
Malaysia, and do a movie with Viola Davis. And got to be friends with her and somebody that I've just respected and admired forever. Mm-hmm. And having seen her on stage like 15, 20 years ago,
uh-huh.
and then to get to work with, you know, when you get to work with people that you grew up admiring.
I get that feeling all the time. Every time because I used to be obsessed with Chris Farley and David Spade movies. And
really?
Yeah.
Tommy Boy, are you like a...
Yeah. And now Kevin Farley, who is a lot like, looks a lot like Chris, is one of my best friends. And I perform with David Spade on stand-up shows all the time. I'm like, this is something when I was like 11 years old, I was watching like, this is so funny.
Yeah.
And now they're, you know, people I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So weird.
Yeah. I worked with Spade. I did Dickie Roberts, mm-hmm. former child star. That's where I met Lovitz. And it's, again, like being around those, you know, being around the funny people,
mm-hmm.
You hope some of it rubs off on you.
Yeah.
You know, that's more your world than mine. And so it's probably, you have a lot more fun because you're around those people all the time. But so I love being around people that I hope, their talent rubs off of me. One of the very first things I ever got to do was a movie with Robert Duvall.
Mm-hmm.
And
I love him.
I was just,
he's one of my favorite actors.
He's probably my favorite actor.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough to do a movie with him called The Stars Fell on Henrietta. And I remember showing up and, I mean, at that point, this was in 92 or something. And, you know, from Network to The Godfather to Godfather 2 to Tender Mercies, I mean, everything he's done, just, you know. And so I showed up and I was completely in awe of him. And I made this ridiculous decision that I was going to like chew gum and like have a bit of a limp mm-hmm. in the scene. And, you know, I had this thick Texas accent. I was talking like this. So I had the accent and the limp and mm-hmm. I was chewing gum and I was just acting my ass off. I mean, I was just acting up a fucking storm. And the director came up to me. He's like, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm acting." He said, "Yeah, you are." He says, "You're trying to out-act Robert Duvall, aren't you?" And I said, "No." He said, "Yeah, you're trying to out-act." He says, "You're on screen with Robert Duvall. Just be. Let him, you know, like, you can't compete with that." And I thought, he's right. What am I doing?
That's
you
really know? Funny.
And Duvall pulled me aside afterwards, and he says, "You know, I see what you're doing with the gum and the limp and all that." He's like, "Nice try." You know,
was he nice about it?
Huh?
He was nice.
He was lovely about it. I mean, Duvall was a Sandy Meisner guy. He was he studied with Sanford Meisner, the same teacher that I studied with. Yeah. So, you know, and if anybody teaches you that less is more, especially an actor like Duvall,
totally.
So I was just, it was just my nerves and my, you know, and I wanted to, you know, I wanted to kind of showboat a little bit. Yeah. I don't think I was intentionally trying to out-act him, but I think I wanted to be interesting.
Yeah.
And when you
but people are usually more interesting when they're just being and not trying so hard.
Mm-hmm. When you watch an actor trying to be interesting, that's the kiss of death.
Totally.
That's when you know you like fucking get out the acting police. Yeah.
Okay, I know you have to go to an audition, but you're fascinating to talk to, so I just have a few more questions.
Oh, yeah.
Are you late yet?
What time is it?
It's 1:28.
1:28. All right.
Two more questions, maybe.
Ask me. I'm good.
Okay.
I'm all right.
You're okay for now. What advice would you give to someone that like wants to get in the entertainment industry? Would you tell them to do it? Would you tell them not to do it?
I would tell them the same thing that I tell the kids that I teach. Really, really study. You have to go in with fully loaded. You have to go in fully prepared. It's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard out there for a pimp, you know?
Yeah.
It's you got to be, you have to have your training.
Yeah. I say that. I also say you have to really love it because there's
really
so much rejection. You can't just go in here half-assing it. You got
to
love it.
You have to.
And not have an exit plan. People that are like, "I'm going to do it for 5 years. And then if it doesn't work out.
Have an exit plan, but.
No, I'm saying don't have an exit plan.
But you have to have an exit plan. You should have a backup.
I just think the people that say like, "All right, I'm going to go try it for 5 years," and then, well, how do you know on your sixth year it wasn't going to happen? You have
That's
to
true.
Just keep
That's
doing.
True. I mean, I started when I was 24, and I thought, "Wow, if I'm not getting offers to star in movies by the time I'm 30, then I'm going to give up."
You know? Yeah,
I thought, well, that's
can't
ridiculous.
Do that. Yeah,
you know,
because I bet the career that you thought you had is probably different than the one you have. Just like I didn't expect to move to LA. I moved to LA to be an actress. I didn't think I'd become a stand-up comic.
Yeah.
And that's become like, you know, the bread and butter of my career.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think people should have at least an app.
I know what you're saying. I mean, not an exit strategy.
Yeah.
But
like a backup plan to support yourself.
It helps to have something else that you're good at.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I always knew that, you know, I could teach drama in college or I could go into advertising or whatever. I mean, I tell the students, like, really be, I mean, when I first started out, you know, you got your Chekhov and your Ibsen and your Shaw and your Shakespeare and your stage combat. I mean, you had to be well-rounded, you know, you had to be really well-trained. And I don't think the actors that are coming up these days...
Because they think they can just become famous off of Instagram and
exactly,
stuff.
Exactly.
There's half of them have zero training.
Yeah.
They just...
And that makes me bananas.
It makes me mad, too.
You know,
it's really annoying.
The Instagram stars. That are people that are getting paid to have their pictures on Instagram and they become, you know, world famous models. Listen, God bless them if they're making a lot of money. But
half those ones get movie roles.
Some of them get movie roles. And that does not an actor make. And what happens is that, you know, you get slapped up on the cover of Vanity Fair magazine or Us magazine and you become the star of the moment. You become the flavor of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And then you flame out, you know, because if you don't have the tools and the equipment and the wherewithal to know what you're doing to navigate
business. Acting is the same way as comedy in the sense of like Jerry Seinfeld has this famous quote where he says that comedy is the closest thing to justice. If you're
comedy
good,
is
you
the closest thing to justice.
If
Who
you're good,
are these
you
people?
Survive. That if not, awful. If not, you don't make it. Like it's like you actually. Do you think acting is the same way, or do you think people can fake it?
I think a lot of people fake it.
Yeah.
I think you can fake it, but eventually you're going to get found out.
Yeah.
Eventually you're going to get caught faking it. You can only fake it for so long.
Okay, I agree with
you
that.
You can only fake it for so long. You have to have good representatives that believe in you. That's all part of the business, But man, you gotta be good.
Yeah,
you gotta be well trained.
That's true.
You gotta know your shit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've been doing this for almost 30 years, and I feel like I'm just hitting my sweet spot. I feel like I feel like I'm just really getting good at it. I really do.
Huh.
I mean, when I sat down.
Surprising to hear.
No, but I mean, when I sat down with Sandy Meisner and when I was 21 years old, and he taught he had a house on the island of Bekwi in the West Indies,
mm-hmm.
and he took 20 students there every summer, 10 boys and 10 girls on an island in the West Indies, and we lived and breathed acting work every
day.
That
is so cool.
It was phenomenal. It was great. And one of the first things he said to us was, it takes 20 years to become a good actor. And I remember thinking, 20 years? I don't have 20 years. Wow. I want to go now. I'm ready to go. And he was right. I mean,
do you think it has to do with life experience, too?
Yeah. Yeah, you got to have life experience.
You have to have empathy and you have to have been through shit to be able to... Yeah.
I mean, that...
Emote.
That shitty heartbreak that I went through that mm-hmm. I told you about earlier.
Yeah.
It cracked open something in me then... And I was able to plug into and access
mm-hmm.
An emotional avenue mm-hmm. in my body. This sounds really highfalutin. And
no, it doesn't. It's
douchey.
Exactly. I mean, all art and comedy come from pain.
Okay, so I mean, I really got my ass kicked in that mm-hmm. relationship thing, and I learned from it,
mm-hmm.
and I also the pain that I experienced from it. The next time I had to do, I did a play called The Real Thing by Tom Stoppard, which is one of my favorite plays.
Uh-huh.
And I played a guy who was cheated on.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being on stage, and the first time I had to do it, and I went on stage in front of 700 people, and I was living it, mm-hmm. you know? And I think if I hadn't gone through what I went through earlier with that situation, I wouldn't have been able to give the kind of performance that I gave. So, yeah, I mean, so all good art comes out of pain, for sure. So... We just don't want to have too much of it.
I know. It's true. You know? They say pain plus time equals comedy. It's totally true.
No one wants
to hear a comedian be like, my life's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not funny. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's true. What do you like to do like outside of, this is probably the last question, I'll let you go. Even though I could talk to you for hours. What do you like to do outside of acting? What do you do outside of work? What are you passionate about?
I like hiking and long walks on the beach. And no, I, you know what? I'm a reader. I love books. I'm a book junkie. I love movies. I'm just now starting to catch up on. I've never seen an episode of Game of Thrones, so mm-hmm. I'm like,
I'm going to start doing that too. I saw the first season.
But that's not an answer to your question.
Are you?
I love to travel. And I'm a food junkie.
I was just going
to
say because your bio at the end says that you love frequenting restaurants. Food, that's like my favorite thing in the world.
I went to.
What are your favorite restaurants in
the
world?
In town? Oh, in the world? Well, my favorite.
Give a few here and then a few in New York.
I love a place here called Luke.
Yeah, I love that place.
Which is down the street.
My moronic ass, when I first moved here, I got someone took me on a date there.
To Luke?
When I was like 21 or 22.
Yeah, very
I pronounced it Luques.
Luques?
Mm-hmm. I wanted to kill myself.
That's how it's spelled. Luques. Mm-hmm. Yep,
yeah, but
I love
so
Luke. I love AOC. I love...
good places.
I love the French Laundry.
Where's that?
French Laundry is up in...
Oh, my parents went there recently.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredibly expensive, right?
It's up in Yountville. It's up in Northern California Napa.
It's the best restaurant they've ever been to.
It's probably one of the best restaurants. It's certainly one of the best in the country, if not the mm-hmm. world. There's a restaurant in Paris called Taillevent.
Mm-hmm.
I
love Paris.
I could go on. I can mm-hmm. go on about...
How about New York?
About food places. New York... I like New York joints. Uh-huh. So I go, as soon as I go to New York, I drop my bags and I go to PJ Clark's.
Oh, I like that place.
Yeah. You know, just a good old fashioned New York joint. Just a good old fashioned New York bar.
What street's it on?
Burger and a beer, 55th and 3rd.
I think, is there a hotel next to it?
No.
I went there the last time I was in New York and sat at a bar by myself.
There's a couple of versions of PJ Clark's, but the main one, the original one, is on the Upper East Side.
I think, after a comedy show, one of those was next to my hotel, and I sat there at like 2 a.m. by myself, like the lady that I am.
No, but I what's another place? I mean, I love sushi, and I just love food, man.
Me too.
It's my favorite thing besides
comedy.
Yeah.
Comedy
and sushi?
No, just food.
Food.
Comedy and food.
Yeah. I went to visit you know Steven Weber, the actor Steven Weber?
Sounds
from
familiar.
Wings and a billion things. He was shooting something in New Orleans a couple of years ago when I was in Atlanta, and he said, why don't you come visit me? Come and hang out.
Mm-hmm.
Get on a plane, come to New Orleans, and we'll have dinner. And I'd never been to New Orleans before.
Mm-hmm.
So I flew to New Orleans and I said, like, I said, we got to have a nice, quiet evening, nice dinner. Can't do anything too crazy because I got to be back on set tomorrow afternoon. And we went and had a great dinner. And next thing I knew it, I'm walking down the street in New Orleans with, like, a scotch in my hand, walking down the street and eating every other fifth place that we stop into. And I thought, if I lived in New Orleans, I would be 400 pounds, diabetic, alcoholic, because all I want to do is just eat and drink.
Because that's what they do there.
Yeah.
New Orleans is cool. It's a weird city, but it's
very
cool.
It's a weird city, but it's a great city.
Very cool.
Yeah, just the music and everything about it, I love.
Are you a fan of Anthony Bourdain?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Do you happen to know him?
I do. I've met him.
He's one of my dream podcast guests.
It's my dream job. He has my dream job, too. Yeah.
Would you give up acting and have that job?
In a heartbeat. In a second. To fly all over the world.
It's the greatest job ever.
Forget about it. And meet people.
And he gets drunk on the show, too, which cracks me up.
He gets drunk. He drinks. He eats great food. He gets
to go to... It's the coolest job ever.
Ridiculous, places all over the... I mean, constantly, have you watched Chef's Table?
I don't think so.
Oh, my God. On Netflix, Chef's Table?
Is it one of his shows?
No. It's a Netflix show, and it focuses on one chef in a restaurant every episode.
I got to write that down.
Oh, it's fantastic. You're going to get addicted to it. It's such a great show.
Maybe I'll watch it today.
Chef's Table. So good. Watch the one about the chef. I forget his name. It's a chef in Spain. There's one in Spain and one in Italy. But it's the Spanish chef one.
Okay.
It's just like, and you're just watching, and just the way that it's filmed.
Yeah.
Just the food.
Do you like to cook?
Oh, yeah. I'm a good cook.
Me too.
Yeah.
I just love food.
Yeah.
That was why I was a fat kid when I was younger.
Were you?
And then I was like, oh, you can't eat that much. You can only eat.
But in Oregon, in a small town in Oregon.
Oh, yeah. 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 It didn't matter.
And now there's so much filming in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
I love working at Portland because that's such a great food town.
What have you done there?
I did Leverage up there and The Librarians. And I did a little indie film up there a couple of years ago.
It's great, but it rains a lot.
It rains a lot. And I was there for about 2 weeks. It rained every single day for 2 weeks.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. And my one day off,
I took the train.
Took the train up to Seattle for the day because I'd never been to Seattle. And it was the one sunny day, and I got to Seattle, and it rained the entire time I was in Seattle.
Oh, my God.
And then I took the train back to Portland, and I could see the clouds forming as I was pulling into the tree.
So depressing.
But I still loved it.
It's beautiful there, though. That's why it's so green. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Hey, I had a pleasure.
Do you want to plug anything or anything you're working on? Or?
I mean, Bosch. I'm on Bosch now on Amazon, which is a great show. Season 3 of Bosch. Have a really fun recurring gig on this show, Insecure. I'm not in the movie Bella.
Yeah.
Direct, but that's coming out.
Where did they even get that name?
It's The Public is coming out. Okay. Emilio Estevez is The Public, which is going to be wonderful. With Jeffrey Wright and Alec Baldwin and Kristen Slater and Jenna Malone and Michael K. Williams, an incredible cast. And starting the Jason Reitman thing in a couple weeks. So
exciting.
Yeah. So I'm just, just busy boy.
You are very much so. All right. Well, thanks
for
doing
this. Food
and work. It's my thing.
It was great meeting you.
Great meeting you. And tell us where you can find you on social media.
I'm on Twitter at @1 Spencer Garrett and on Instagram at Spencer Garrett @1.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.org.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday.
How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.